Hey, everybody. Welcome to an author spotlight on Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and I am extremely excited to bring to you author Karina Hale. Did I say it right? Is it Hale or Haley? No.
Hallie.
Holly. Hallie.
Like Halle Berry, like Halle Bailey. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I know.
That's okay.
You want to do that again?
No. It's fine.
I was actually about to stop you right before, and I was going to be like, by the way, do you know when it's pronounced Hallie? Just because, like, you never know where it's going to go. I mean, when I graduated high school, they called me on stage to get my diploma, and they called me Katrina Hall. Karina, well, I've gotten Katrina Hall before, but he called me Karina Hall. And literally the entire, all my classmates were like, it's Hallie. So I've got it for a long time. So don't worry.
I did, you know what? And it did dawn on me yesterday, and I just got busy and didn't. Oftentimes I will send in, I'm terrible with name pronunciations. One, I'm a Midwester, but I also don't hear certain vowel and letter sound combo sounds.
Same.
So I oftentimes will message an author and be like, can you please send me a voice memo with how to say your name so that I don't mess it up? But I apologize for getting it wrong.
That's okay. It is part of the deal. I even have like a glass that some readers gave to me that's on my shelf. I'm looking at it. It says Karina Hallie. And then underneath says like Hallie, like Halle Berry.
Like Halle Berry.
That's how common this is.
Karina Hallie is a screenwriter, a former music and traveling journalist, and the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today bestselling author of River of Shadows, The Royals Next Door, and The Black Sunshine, as well as 70 other wild and romantic reads, ranging from light and sexy rom-coms to horror, paranormal romances, and dark fantasy. Needless to say, whatever genre you're into, she's probably written a romance for it. When she's not traveling, she and her husband split their time between a possible haunted 122-year-old house in Victoria, BC, and their sailboat, the Norfin, and their condo in Los Angeles. For more information, you can find her website. You will find all her website and her socials on our On the Shelf show notes at buzzingaboutromance.com so people can find you.
I am accessible.
You are accessible. you actually are. And, you know,
most of the time.
Well,
until I'm on a deadline and then it's like, where did I go? I don't know. But when I'm like not in the like crazy time of deadline and like, you know, menti bees and whatever I'm having, then yes, I will. You can usually find me just bumming around online, shit posting on Threads, etc.
Well, Threads is like the royal, like it is the wild, wild west of social media.
Yes, it is. It can be fun. I think I enjoy it more than at the beginning. I think once you get used to the way it works and just the way people are, then you kind of adapt to it. But at first I was like, why am I just saying like really innocuous, innocent things? Like, I like tomatoes. And suddenly like there's people calling me like a whore in the comments. Like it didn't make any sense. And people like, do you like, you know what I mean? Like, well, that's nice for you. What if I'm allergic to tomatoes? Like the weirdest comments. And it's like, okay. So once I got used to like, that's how people respond here, then I think I've gotten better handling like, so you know, when you say anything, whether it's that benign or something that's kind of controversial, that you're going to get some pushback. You just got to accept it. And just like, I found that like, I'm a huge deleter of threads. So if it's getting too much, I'm just like, okay, you're gone. You don't exist, because my ADHD will make me focus on it. Or just like the muting, limiting replies, or just like muting all the conversation. And then it's like, oh, I've totally forgot about that. So once you can navigate it, it's actually, it can be quite fun. But it will drive you insane sometimes.
I actually really like it, but I do find myself, I'm a type out a message and then hit delete, you know, and don't ever actually post it, because
that's pretty smart. Yeah.
There's been a lot of comments, people, readers, and it's hard because I straddle that line of reader and industry worker. You know, I started with a big five publisher as a contract worker. Now I do it freelance. And because of that, like, I straddle this line, but I've also been reading romance since 1990.
Wow.
I've been around a minute. So it's like, So people will get on there and they'll say something like, I can't believe an author would ever pay like a beta reader. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, great. There's reasons.
Yeah, there's reasons that might happen. It's up to the, you know, like right. there's a million, or people are just having really like takes that are like, if you've been around a while, you're just like, no, that's not how that works, you know, and like, but they're talking as if it's truth, and it's just like, no, man, like, and so it takes a lot to like, I'll have, if I see the like this, don't get me started on the HEA thing, because like every single week someone's like, is it actually necessary? Why is it so predictable? And it's just like the other day when I saw it, I'm like, no, don't comment.
It's actually at the end of the month, we're doing a Sunday episode. Another podcast host, she's coming on, and we're doing a Sunday episode to talk about the HEA and the difference between books, you know, genre fiction with romantic elements. Because I love the argument of, well, you know, Nicholas Sparks. And I'm like, first of all, so I had the pleasure of taking a creative writing class from Jennifer Cruzy back in the 90s when she taught at Ohio State. And, you know, Nicholas Sparks was mean to her, like nasty in an interview about her. Oh. And she was like, yeah, that guy's going to stick around. And she said it then. She's like, he is going to be the itch in our crawl for like the next 30 years.
Oh, no.
So we just have to ignore him.
Yeah.
And if you go to his website and you read any of his past interviews, he's like, I don't write romance.
Yeah, of course. He's just like, not only is he saying like, yeah, so you don't call it romance. I don't. But of course, he says it with like a, it's kind of beneath me kind of thing. But like, but the fact is he doesn't write romance. He doesn't himself. And people the other week were arguing and they were literally saying, someone was saying, oh, well, that doesn't really count. Like what he kind of like, what is he? So it's the stores and how they're shelving me. I'm like, no, the author knows more about their book than the store. I can promise you that. And stores don't always get it right. I literally just got a message, a comment from someone. It was a good comment. She said that I was at the Indigo, which is our Chapters. It's our books, Barnes and Noble here in Canada. And she said that in Calgary, and I saw Black Sunshine there, which to me, I've never seen Black Sunshine in any store other than maybe a few Barnes and Noble. So that's really cool. And she said it was under sci-fi. This is like a dark vampire romance. And I'm like, you know what? And she's like, I told the person at the cash to put it in romance. And I was like, that's great. But you know what? I'm just happy that it was just there at all. So sci-fi like is not a stretch. I'm like, oh my God. I mean, like, I guess it's not like, you know, it's okay to be there. But you mean like stores shelf things wrong all the time. So like, I'm sure there are stores putting Nicholas Sparks in romance, but it's not a romance. They don't have AGAs. Why do we have this argument every single week? It takes a lot of like restraint to be like, don't comment. And usually a million people have already commented and said what I was going to say anyway. So I'm like, okay, my voice is not needed to be added to this. But I do kind of stew about it.
I stew also. Like,
I'm turning it off for now.
I also laugh because Katie Robert, technically, if she's like feeling spicy, she just goes in and like, you know.
Exactly. Katie will handle it.
I just am like, okay, we got Katie on a good day today. Good for us.
Exactly.
Bad like, for
see,
you.
Finally, someone is able to like say what I wanted to say, but say it better. There we go.
Right. Yeah. She gets spicy and I just love it.
Yeah, me too. Come on, Katie.
So let's talk a little bit about your upcoming release. The Royals Upstairs releases on September 10th, which for the purposes of this podcast is technically today.
Yay!
Even though we're recording the night before. It's a royal romance because it takes place in your royal world.
Yeah.
But our hero and heroine are not technically royals.
No, I've had people calling it royal adjacent, which I'm like, yes, it's royal adjacent. It's about the nanny, Layla, and the bodyguard, James, working for the Norwegian royal family. So you have the inside look. I mean, you know, I did a lot of research. So, but obviously it's, you know, fiction. But like you have this fictionalized inside look at a royal family, but you're not actually dealing. The love interests aren't the actual royal couples. It's actually just normal civilian people.
Yeah.
And like how do they deal with that? Because one of the reasons I really wanted to write this book is because that's kind of like, what is it like to be just like the normal civilian? And how do you have a relationship with anybody, or even friendships for that matter, when you're either a royal nanny or a royal bodyguard? Like, it seems like it just completely takes over your life. And like, you are kind of, you know, integrated into the royal family, but you're not a royal. What is that like? How are you treated differently? And, you know, how can you have any kind of like a social life or a love life when you're that integrated to something that has such high, you know, secrecy and security and all that kind of stuff?
Well, but even visibility, because everything you do, even as someone adjacent to that royal family, I mean, if we even just look at like real life moments, the nannies get photographed, you know, caring for the children by the paparazzi, and it's like,
and they don't get the pay that makes, you know, like, you know, every time some celebrity, you know, rightfully complains about being harassed by paparazzi, people are always like, yeah, well, I bet the billions of dollars you make, you know, help you sleep at night or something. And it's like, that does help, I'm sure. But what if you're a normal civilian that's not getting paid that much money?
Right.
Like, it's just a normal good wage, I'm sure. And yet your life is a subject of tabloids. Like, that's not fair.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's the good and the bad. So you have written this kind of royal world, but the main focus that you went with was including the Norwegian monarchy. You didn't really make up, you know, I think that typically we've seen two ways that royals are done. One, authors will make up a whole new country.
Yeah.
Or they use like the British royal setting.
Yeah.
But you actually went Norwegian and Denmark.
Oh, the other girl was from Liechtenstein. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what inspired you to be like, okay, you know what? I'm using real countries, but I'm not using the typical one.
Well, I mean, I am, like, my dad was Norwegian. So all of the Halley family is from Norway. And my mom's side, they're all from Finland. So, I mean, it's a Nordic country. They don't have a royalty, but they're still there. So I've grown up around, you know, being in Finland and Sweden and Norway and Denmark. So I knew all about the royals when I was a kid over there. And so, of course, it's just I wanted to showcase my heritage. So Norway. And again, if Finland had a king, I would have done one of them too. But like, so anyways, basically when I came up with that, I was just like, I just want to showcase my heritage. I want to show people like, hey, you know, the other royals other than the Brits exist. And then the more I looked into it, the more fascinating it became, because you wouldn't really believe how, you know, compared to the Brits, like the rest of the royals in Europe, they're so much more looser and more fun, and more likely to take chances on quote unquote commoners. So for example, the real Norwegian prince, he basically met his wife now at an EDM electronic music festival, and she was a single mom. So like, if that's not the starter for a romance, I don't know what is. And see, people would say, well, that's far-fetched. These are not realistic. I'm like, but they are actually, because he did do that. I think it was the Prince of Denmark. He met his wife at the Sydney Olympics, where she was a waitress or at a bartender or something like that. I mean, so like, what is the odds of that? And then the Swedish prince, he met his wife because she was like a journalist for like an e-news type entertainment thing. So like, these are all actual non-royal people that are marrying into those royals. And so I thought that makes it more fun to me. So then that way you have more non-royals kind of entering the picture, and they're just a little bit looser about things. They're not the subject of the paparazzi around the world the way the Brits are, but they are in their own country. So you kind of do have like a little bit less of like, I don't know, paparazzi following you around, even though they're obviously still there. Versus like the English monarchy is very much like, you know, yes, Kate was, I have to admit, I don't know that much, but like, okay, look, Meghan Markle, for example, obviously, okay, she's a commoner. So this is kind of the first time that that's really kind of happened in a big way. So that's kind of why that was a big deal. I think Kate probably was some good bloodline or something.
I do believe there's royal. I'm obsessed with, there's a TikTok influencer that does royal families, Matter of Fact.
Yeah.
And I'm obsessed with her. Like but she also talks about the fashion and the jewels and the tiaras. And it's really interesting when she starts talking about like the Nordic royalty and like Denmark, they are a little looser and they don't try to hide who they are. And, you know, the one prince, when he married his current wife, you know, like she had a tattoo at the base of her neck and the family didn't be like, you have to, you know, cover it up or your dress needs to hide it. And it's like, yeah, because they feel like a little bit more approachable. And I'm sure that there is pomp and circumstance.
Yeah.
But in ceremony, but there just seems to be a little bit more approachability.
Sure. Yeah. And like, and you know, there's wildness to them too. Like the Monaco, in Monaco, I know that their royals are, I mean, obviously they kind of started it too when, Prince Rainier, married Grace Kelly, you know, in the '50s. So, you know, and then they're all their descendants, like, you know, some of them part, like there's a lot that, you know, they're a little bit more loosey-goosey, which I think is just a lot more fun. And it's a lot more, has aged well, because I think you have to adapt with the world and people want to see you be more approachable. And I think that's one thing that the Brits haven't done, but I think that's also, you know, what a lot of the royal followers like about them too, is they have really held on to tradition. So I do like the fact that there's this, the rest of the royals are just kind of a nice contrast to that.
Yeah. So what do you think it is that readers love about royal romances?
I think it's just, it's like the fairy tale aspect. It's like the princess. I mean, everybody wants to be princess growing up, like, or at least, or queen or something like that, right? Like every girl kind of has a little dream of just like, the, you know, either you want the princess to be swept off the feet and, you know, swept away by the guy who chooses you above everyone else. I mean, it's the classic. It's like the Bella and Edward thing, right? Like, why me? Why am I the one picked to be, you know, with you? And then there's also like the power thing, right? So then maybe some of us wanted to be like a queen and to have, you know, the ultimate power over people and servants and have people worship you. And so it's that kind of like fantasy that's kind of built into the royal romances, I think. But I think it's definitely, it comes down to, you're supposed to be kind of a nobody, but here's this person with all this power and privilege, and but they only see you and they want to be with you. And then that makes you feel special. And it's kind of like the bread and butter of most romances, I think.
Yeah. I also think that there's like an elegance that's different than a billionaire romance. There's like an elegance to royal romance.
You're right. Yeah. There's a lot more pomp to it. There's a lot more ceremony and rituals and like balls and stuff like that. Whereas the billionaire is going to maybe go to like, I don't know, the Met Gala or something, but he's not going to go to this, you know, swanky, you know, ball held at the King of Spain's castle or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So one of the things that I noticed as I was going through and looking at all of your royal romances, you like a second chance romance.
Is that true?
It was a common theme, either pure second chance with the same person or a second chance at love.
Yes, that's true. Second chance at love. I definitely, you're right. It's funny because like this thing, like, you know, I've written so much that like, I have no idea what I'm doing half the time, but second chance at love is a common one. I like the idea of just because you lost, you know, who the person that you thought you're going to be with or the love of your life, that, you know, that it bothers me, you know, or at least I should say it used to bother me more. I guess I can understand now, but it used to bother me when I was younger that people are like, oh, you know, nothing will compare to the first love of your life. And like, I just don't think that's true at all, because like, I'm now with the love of my life, but like my first love, like, what was his name? Like, who cares? Yeah. You know, like I'd hate to like be still pining after him or like feeling like that nothing would measure up. So I like the idea of the second chance at love, because it kind of proves that just because something's over, it doesn't mean it's over for you. Like, you will go on and you will find someone else who will be even better, you know? So, and when it comes to like second chance romance with the same person, it's funny. I was just talking about this the other day and I was like, I am totally the person that's like, don't get back together with your ex. It'll never work out. I mean, look at J-Lo and Ben. I mean, I was rooting for them though. Yeah. So I really was like, please let it work out this time. I don't know why I care, but I do. But seriously, usually it doesn't work. And but in romance novels, yeah, it's going to work and you want it to work. And I like the idea of people kind of not changing who they are, but just growing into a better version of themselves that's more compatible with the other person. So I like kind of seeing that love happen again, but from like that different starting point.
Yeah. I think I don't know that second chance can be a favorite or not a favorite for people. I love the idea that there's an opportunity for redemption.
Yes.
Like to fix some of the mistakes. And like you, I'm with the love of my life. I can't even remember. I mean, we've been together 25 years. I can't remember people past.
Whoever that one was.
Yeah. But, you know, like there's the thought that, wouldn't it be great if you could even like have second chance within a friendship that maybe you screwed up or you messed up? There's this chance for to right those wrongs, that peace.
Exactly. And also I'm a sucker for the angst. So the second chance romance, I do like, I understand why people don't like it because it can bring about like, I mean, for me, when I am reading a book, I am more likely to not read second chance because I do am all about meeting each other for the first time kind of thing. But when writing, I like writing second chance when it's more about like kind of like the built in tension is there. So you already have the groundwork or how these two people know each other. So, for example, like this, like The Rose Upstairs is obviously a novel. It's like 90,000 words or something, but like a novella, if you're going to do a novella, I think second chance is kind of the way to go because you can already establish that these two characters know each other. So you can kind of jump right into things. So I like that aspect of it. And I like the, just the tension of like, you know, cause there's going to be so much baggage and like, that's going to be something that they're going to have to deal with. And that's conflict, and conflict is great.
Conflict is great. So what is your, I'm going to ask a two-part question. One, what is your favorite part when you're writing? Is it the tension? Is it the chemistry? Is it the banter? Is it building the setting? What, even when you're writing in your fantasy voice, what's the best part for you for writing?
Having being done written. No. No. That's true though. I'm the happiest when I've actually just finished a book. But I don't know. You know what? I think for me, the parts I look forward to the most are banter for sure. Flirting, bickering, fighting, like anything that gets a lot of dialogue happening. Anything that's dialogue heavy. Those are actually probably my favorite things to write. Obviously like sexual tension scenes, those are fun. Those are a lot of fun when it's like the almost kiss, you know, like, and it's just like, you know, the Darcy hand flex kind of scene.
Yes. 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 So on the other hand though, what do you avoid the most when you're writing? And it can
sex
be
scenes.
Sex scenes. You aren't the author that says that.
I know. And I have a lot of sex scenes, which is a problem, but like, but seriously, it's because to me, they're so hard to do right. And I can just flow past through mostly everything, but except fight scenes, like battle fight scenes, like, and sex scenes. Those two for me are so hard. I think it's because they both require so much choreography, and it can be, even though I see everything so visually in my head, like a movie, for some reason, those scenes are hard to get down. It's hard to like not sound, it's hard to make it not cheesy and cringy. It's hard to not make it repetitive. You're looking for different words, but you also know you can't use that many different words because then someone's gonna find that cringy or you might cringe at it. And it's just, and you're trying to establish like something that is both gonna, you know, obviously titillate the reader, but also showing like the actual connection between the characters as well. So it's not just there for like no reason. So it's kind of like melding those together, and they just take me, for whatever reason, so long to do. So like writing them, like I can't say like when I'm actually writing them, I hate them, but it's just like because it takes me so long versus writing the rest of the book, that bothers me. It bothers me that it makes me so slow. So like if I'm like, oh, I have to write a sex scene today, like normally I could write, if I was in a rush, I could write three chapters and like do three chapters. But if one of those chapters has a sex scene, I'll need to take the entire day to just do that scene. And so that annoys me. So I shouldn't say like it's the sex scenes that like themselves that are the problem. But it's definitely the fact that I have to slow down with them, like, and that screws everything up. That, and of course, and the fight scenes, the battle scenes, those are so hard to do too for me. I don't know. But I'm not the only one. I know the other people said like battle and sex scenes, so I guess I'm gonna have to say it's got something to do with the choreography of what hand and doing this, and what foot's doing that. I don't know.
No, I know. I've interviewed authors who have like sex Barbies so that they can make sure that hands are where they're supposed to be and that like legs and you don't
Smart.
randomly forget
Yeah,
things.
I've just got Funko Pops everywhere, and I don't think that'll help.
Probably not. They don't really bend.
They don't do that.
So, The Royals Upstairs, it comes out on September the 10th. It is a second chance. I have it as enemies to lovers, because
I you know what? I think it's lovers to enemies to lovers.
okay, because they have a history and there's a lot of tension and some unresolved
Angst
issues.
and there is some like, oh, I hate you. So like, is it, maybe it's love to hate to love or something like that,
Or
or hate to
even
love.
maybe like adversaries to
Yes, definitely
lovers.
adversaries. They're not happy that they're there working with each other, that's for sure.
And it's close proximity, work romance, the bodyguard and the nanny. It's a dual point of view. And we do get kind of a dual timeline a little bit because we do see some of their
The
first
past. Yeah.
moments together. Our heroine, Lila. Did I say her?
Layla.
Layla. I'm just going to butcher everybody's names
That's
tonight
okay.
across the board. She is the nanny. And she is like quiet and introverted,
Bookish.
bookish. I just loved her. She's kind of that shy and nerdy heroine,
Yeah.
that there's just
A
so
little bit
much
socially awkward,
sweetness.
doesn't fit in.
I really liked
Definitely, I
her.
definitely like, I'm autistic, so I definitely did her an autistic coded for sure. So there was a little bit of that. I mean, I didn't come out and say it, but I mean, if you're reading it and you're autistic, you can pick up on it.
I have a child that falls into that, and yes, you do pick up on it.
Good. That's good.
And then we have James, who is the newly appointed bodyguard. And he's not an alpha hero, but he's not like a cinnamon roll. He's a rule
No.
follower, and he's a little rigid.
Yes, he is rigid. He's like, in one part of him, he's very cocky and kind of like bantery and relaxed. But the other part of him, he's very and rule following. But you know what? I think you have to be like, to be a bodyguard, to be under that kind of stress all the time. Like, it's like if you don't follow the rules, someone's going to end up dead.
He's a rule follower for sure. And I really liked their chemistry. So, and I don't want to spoil this for anyone. I want them to go out. I want them to grab their copy and read it. But when you were building these characters, who came to you first?
James.
James. Because
So
he's.
James was in Royals Next Door. So I already knew him from that. I mean, I didn't know much about him. He just kind of existed. But so I just knew he was Scottish, because I love writing about Scottish men. And so I knew he was Scottish, and that was about all I knew. So he came to me first, kind of fully formed. So that's why the book starts with his chapter, because I knew right away who he was and what he was all about. And so then Layla came after.
That he's really great. I really liked him. I kind of feel like he, in our house, I refer to my husband often as the voice of reason. Like, I'm a little more like, hey, we should do this and it'll be big and exciting and fireworks. Yeah. And he'll be like, and the roof will catch on fire and it will not be great.
Yeah.
And I feel like James in this book is kind of the voice of reason. But we do have a couple of cute children that do steal the spotlight a little bit. They're fantastic. They are fantastic and fun. And they kind of force James to, you know, not be so stoic all the time.
Yeah. I think for him, like, I think the whole family, I think one of the reasons why, like, James is so strict is because the family is so the opposite of the last royal family is with. So they're so loosey-goosey that he's just like, what is wrong with these people? I need to be kind of like the one, like, if you let Prince Magnus, like, just do whatever he wants, he will just, like, jump off a cliff with, like, one of those little squirrel suits, you know, which he's done before. So, like, he has to be there kind of keeping this prince in line, like, oh my god, how is this my job, like, running after this guy all the time, trying to protect him when he's, like, barely can protect himself, like, is throwing himself into danger all the time. So, yeah, so he's trying to, you know, but they wear him down, and definitely the kids. And it's funny you mention that, because those two kids are based on my nephews. Unoriginally have the same name, Tor and Bjorn. And but they right now are very intelligent, strapping young men in their 20s or whatever. But I'm basing them on the kids that I knew when they were like 3 and 5. And oh, my goodness, they're going to read this one day and be like, what the, but like Bjorn was just the devil child and just like, would bite you. And Tor was like this soulful kid. And you know, remember he would go like, they live in New Zealand. So when I was in New Zealand for school, I'd see them a lot. And Tor would come up to me and be like, why do you think Bjorn despises me so? I'm just like, oh, Tor. Don't worry, little brother's just nuts. So basically those kids are in the book, and it'll be fun when they find out one day. Well, their mother's gonna read it because she's a librarian too. She's gonna read it at some point and be like, oh my god.
My children did this.
Surprise!
I think it's hilarious. That's so funny. So like we said, The Royals Next Door is out today. You can get it wherever books are sold. If it's not in your library, request it for your library. What is next for Karina Haley?
Hallie. So a lot. I just finished the book called Realm of Thieves, and that's coming out next summer from Berkeley or Ace Books. And that's a romantic series. It's basically like Game of Thrones, but make it mafia with dragons and romance. So like obviously Game of Thrones has dramas, but dragons in it. But like it's basically mafia romantasy with dragons. Excellent. And so that's coming out in next summer. And I'm super excited about that because I just finished that. And this year I have Underworld Gods 4, Goddess of Light, which is the last book in my other romantasy series that's coming in the end of November. I have a book called The Ruins of Ruin, which is a Nordic Viking fantasy, but it's based, I don't know if you watch Rings of Power, but it's basically based on the Galadriel and Halbrand dynamic versus basically like a book where the girl actually chooses the villain and like ends up bad. So like that's kind of that dynamic I want to do. So it'll come in like December or January or something like that. I do have a secret project I'm working on next. It's a psychological thriller, dark academia, gothic horror romance vibes with a bit of sci-fi. So
fun.
I haven't talked too much about it, but end of this month I'll have like a cover reveal and a blurb and all that kind of stuff. But I'm really excited about it. I've been waiting to write this thing since like May. So I've had this notebook since May, and like since May I've just jotted down every single idea, just waiting for when I was done Realm of Thieves to finally do it. So now I'm in like literally in the middle of it, and I'm just, I love it.
That's so awesome.
I can't wait for that. Yeah. I can't wait for that to come out. So yeah, a lot is coming. And then next September I have the traditional re-release of Hollow and Legend, which is my MMF Sleepy Hollow retelling.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot.
It's exciting though. And it's nice to see some of your older books, because I have been reading you for a couple years now to get new life. you know, yes, that their new readers are finding them.
And I'm so happy about that for The Hollow and Legend. Like, I really am, because I really love those books. And I really love that, how, you know, kind of different take it was on Sleepy Hollow. Like, it has the MMF and, you know, the polyamorous angle of it. It's also horror. It's dark academia. It's witchy. It's gothic. It's all the things. And so when it got picked up by Berkeley Ace, I was frankly surprised, because I was just like, oh, I didn't even know that this book was on your radar. Like, it didn't have like a huge release. And also it's MMF. So like, I didn't know, but I mean, I'm glad that they picked it up and they're like, no, we want this in the bookstores. And I'm like, fantastic. Like,
it's yours.
I couldn't be happier. Yeah.
It's exciting. It's exciting. Cause you have the re-release of your book Smut and all these things. And it's really great because, you know, I'm a mom of a young adult now, and it's nice that there are some of these books that she likes a paperback. I don't get it. Like, I'm an e-reader, so I don't understand, but she likes a paperback. So it's exciting that she will, you know, get a chance to pick these books up and stuff now. Cause
exactly. And that's the thing, like Smut, I decided to redo just cause like, I wanted to do my romantic comedies. Cause I have like, I like illustrated covers. Don't get me wrong. Like, I really do. But I do think they're really well suited for romantic comedies, because then you're not confused about what's in the book kind of thing.
Right.
And so I wanted to give my true romantic comedies new life. So I redid the cover for Love Wrecked earlier this year, just redid the cover for Smut. And I have another book called Bad at Love that I had the cover redone months ago. So I'm kind of waiting. This reminds me, I should probably redo that. So at some point soon, I'll redo the cover for that one too. So like, just kind of giving it new life and new purpose again, you know?
Yeah, it's so awesome. Karina, thank you so much for coming out and hanging out with me and talking about The Royals Upstairs.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Until next time, everybody, happy reading.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.